record in World Cup, there's about four or five different versions of it. One of it's Jason LD, and mm-hmm. you know, so there are transformations that already exist for some of these things. If you're using something like Dublin Core mods and you want to transform it to a different format, there are already transformations already exist that you can use if you want to transform it to something different.
Okay.
Yeah, to a different format or schema. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. I think at some level
it's just, I mean, from a from data management perspective, yeah. keeping the documents separate from their description is common. Having them combined just ends up being, it's got a lot more overhead.
But then one more level beyond that is if you're marking up, describing the text in a way and that's in markup, that adds that extra layer of, it's another layer of that problem, because now you've marked up the text and now you're moving on to the research level. If you ever go back and change the base level of descriptive stuff, now the research stuff and it are out of sync, if that makes sense.
Well, they shouldn't duplicate each other. Right.
So what I'm thinking is, if would it make more sense to have all the documents marked up at all the levels and then filter out the research end stuff and then serve the filtered document instead of maintaining one document that's, say, annotated just at the descriptive level, then the next document that's annotated at this additional, you know, say we code the topics of particular articles. If we separate out, if we have the base level, we serve that, and then you build another level on top of it. Now, if you ever change anything on the second level, you now have to also go change it in the first. Whereas if you build it all as one cohesive markup and then filter out everything that's not descriptive, then theoretically those two would stay in sync.
I mean, part of this is if you have anything that is generated automatically, then you're not necessarily preserving those annotations, you're preserving the code that produces those annotations. And so anytime you change something about the structure, or you expand the corpus, or you have a completely new corpus but that maintains the same sort of, you know, whatever that change, whatever that difference is, you just rerun your annotation generation code, whether that's for named entities or
right.
part of speech tagging or whatever. You just
but
rerun
that's
that.
All if it's purely programmatic.
Yes.
Yeah.
If it's manual, that's argument for automation.
It is, but it's also, I'm trying to think of a way of doing it so that if you did do manual annotations, that you don't lose that, or you don't have to go into some sort of weird versioning scheme to say base level, annotated level, that would require...
You might.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm thinking, like, if you take the end product and filter backward,
yeah,
then... because you're programmatically building the base descriptive set from the end set.
You might want to talk to the Artful guys about that, because
okay.
they do accept, you know, error reporting, and how they integrate that might be interesting for you.
Yeah, I'm envisioning the, you know, your basic encoded document as one product, and then your annotated, you know, document, same document but annotated or, you know, more scholarly input as a second product.
Yeah.
Now, if you wanted to, if you changing the underlying text in one version versus the other, then yeah, you're causing. If you're talking about, if we're just talking about the documents, we're not talking about the metadata, we're talking about the document.
That's what, yeah, the marked up
yeah.
data in the document.
Well, then, yeah, I mean, then you're there on the sync, and you have to change it in both places because you have two sets of documents. But, you know, the idea that you can, and this is, I think, what a lot of TEI projects are doing, is they've got this final document that has all this encoding and markup and annotation. And then they are going backwards and they're stripping it out through some sort of, again, transform, where they're just stripping out all the tagging. It's not probably an easy thing to do. I don't know if you've ever done it, but that's what our new guy is doing. He's taking all our TEI, stripping out all the encoding, and just having raw text.
Yeah, because if you do it the other way, then you have to build up instead of being able to.
But it's a processing step, right? It's like, okay, well, I'm gonna rerun this now. I'm gonna rerun these, 10,000, 100,000 documents. It takes time. It's not like an easy thing to do, but it can be done.
Where are we at on time? We have about 10 minutes left before lunch.
Yeah, depending on. We don't have to stick through.
I can raise one more problem.
Well, the one I did seemed to kill the mood of the room. So I would welcome
a
different problem.
Which is the ethical problems of certain TEI tags.
Okay.
Is it the Hans Sloan, the Sloan project that's at the British Museum and other institutions has been thinking a lot about this because they're doing like basically a massive TEI markup of the Sloan inventories of objects that came into the British Museum, which are all problematic in and of themselves, and then just TEI tags that are modern, so there's a problem of kind of how do you deal with the racism inherent in the original document and the kind of modernism of the tag in deciding if something is like a body part or an object, something like that. And do you classify according to the original intention, or do you classify according to what the researcher thinks, or do you do both, and how do you do that? So they've developed a lot of expertise around that kind of anachronistic problem, which is interesting. Julian Nyhan has been behind a lot of that.
And that's also happening with descriptive metadata, because we're looking at like Library of Congress subject headings, which are fairly long-standing and fairly, questionable sometimes when you think about how they're applied and kind of the perspective they bring. So there's a lot of rethinking of what are the terms we're going to use to describe things going forward.
I don't know what kind of answer was given to what you just talked about, because to me, it seems like it's better to leave it the way it was written by the journal. And then each scholar has the possibility of analyzing and then giving his her own feedback about this thing instead of trying to change it. Just maybe leave it as is.
So maybe that's an argument of not sharing at all the researcher annotated level.
Yeah, because.
Or as an individual interpretation. But it's, it's a question of like, are you reinscribing, these oppressive racist categories.
Yes, but we need always to replace it in its context. Because if we begin interpreting using our today's lenses, then we are also changing the whole story.
That's another issue. That's a big issue we need to talk about, because even the way we would use these computers is already going to be applying a very specific way of understanding and structuring information that is anachronistic.
Maybe keep it and then put an asterisk saying we are using the same language that was used in the late 19th century, and it's up to each scholar to analyze and give their own meaning to this text. Because to me, if we began looking into this using today's lenses, we might really change everything.
But that's what the library standards do.
Yeah.
So it's really important. It's really important.
Yeah. Even coding something as post-colonial from right the 19th century wasn't. Or even calling it cult, it's just
only the name.
We were talking about this before. You inscribed that aspect of the modern world, a very racist, problematic aspect, onto the thing in a way that it didn't inherently have.
You have to have a methodological explanation the way you use, and not worry to be offensive language, because it may happen.
It will be offensive. Or whatever, it will be offensive, or whatever we use now. In 50 years' time, it will be offensive. Yeah. Guaranteed.
Well, on that note.
Okay, can you go to your last slide with the picture of the snake?
Yes.
Because I'm not so worried about the picture of the man. What kind of snake is this? Because there's two kinds of snakes. There's venomous snakes and ones that strangle. A venomous snake would never strangle. And a strangling snake would never put its head close to its object. What kind of snake is it?
Oh. It's a made-up snake.
It's a made-up snake.
Imagined snake.
It's a imagined snake.
Ah.
So it's a completely wrong picture. At least I can't find
it. It's an interesting picture in many ways.
Honestly, that would be an amazing first paragraph of a book on.
Yeah. Misunderstanding the whole
environment.
Well,
the figures, what they're communicating, their stance, you know, how he's stopping him with the gun, and he's somehow doing something with the snake to get it, charming the snake to get it not to bite him or strangle him.
Yeah. It's an interesting picture.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
So shall we lunch?
Yeah, let's lunch. And the very short-lived snow.
It's over now.
Dissipated.
It's
so
good.
Coming down.
Summer again.
Leave for any reason. Need some fresh air.